hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Then I started getting pissed off at him, so I emptied both guns into him.
I did really bad things to get drugs.
I killed a man. I blew his face off. If that's vivid enough for you.
Cannibalism is not my choice.
I was young, I was beautiful, I had the whole world in front of me.
The people here are miserable. It's a struggle in here every day.
I'm sitting on death row. How do you accept that?
I got my chance and I blew it.
On this episode, three killers.
I thought it was just a game.
She wouldn't stop saying how much of a loser I was.
At one point, I did say that I'm gonna kill you.
Their intimate confessions, exclusively from maximum security prisons.
I made up a whole story.
And brutal crimes.
Colton went in the house and shot James in the face.
Of love.
He never loved a girl as much as he loves this girl.
Betrayal.
She said she had another girlfriend.
And murder.
It was absolutely a senseless murder.
My name is Shayna Sepulveda. I'm convicted of capital murder and I'm doing a life sentence.
As Saturday nights go, it had been a relatively quiet one. Then, at 8 a.m. Sunday morning, emergency dispatch received a disturbing call, and everything changed.
911.
This is David Bowman.
Okay. What's going on?
My stepson, I think he's dead in the bed.
When investigators arrived, they discovered the body of James Kelly, a truck driver, husband, and father of two. He had been fatally shot in his bed.
To this day, I can close my eyes and I can still see his face, see him laying there in that bed.
Authorities quickly discovered that all was not well in the house of Kelly. There was talk that the victim's wife, Marcia, pronounced Marseille, wanted her husband dead, and she was using Shayna, her 16-year-old daughter, as the go-between.
Shayna offered people trucks, she offered people jet skis, money.
They're accusing her of being a liaison between her mother and the real killers.
It was common knowledge that Shayna loathed her stepfather and desired her mother's approval, no matter the cost.
She was my mom, I loved her, and I would have done anything to make her happy.
You got a mother and a daughter, and they take three other people and they go and they kill their dad, and they think they're gonna get away with it. And that's the most staggering part about this.
Shayna Sepulveda was born in the small town of Nacogdoches in East Texas. When Shayna was in grade school, her mother, Marseille, began an on-again, off-again relationship with James Kelly.
James always loved being in the mud. From the time he's a little boy, if there was a mud puddle, he's gonna be in it. Four-wheel drive, pickups, four-wheelers. James loved his outdoor stuff.
After dating for several years, Marseille, along with daughters Shayna and Jamie, moved in with James and his two sons. But this blended family was no Brady Bunch.
James tried to make Shayna be a better person, but Marseille was just basically letting her do whatever she wanted to do.
Around 12 or 13, I got into drugs and drinking. I started meth, methamphetamine. It made me feel like I was bigger. Nothing matters, it takes all your pain away. I moved in with this guy named Joe. I was like 14 or 15, he was 18. I felt like I needed attention, so I seeked it in boys.
I was more lenient on the kids and pretty much gave them what they wanted.
James used to try to discipline me and it didn't work. We began to hate each other.
Despite the tension, Marseille tied the knot with James.
She wanted to go just in front of the Justice of Peace and get married. And James told her that if he got married, he would get married in a church, because he'd only be married that one time. And it turned out to be true.
The honeymoon was over in the blink of an eye. with Marseille condoning Shayna's disrespectful behavior towards James, the nasty brawls developed threatening overtones.
James and I had a fight, we were arguing, and I told him I was gonna kill him. It was just like a little thing that we had between each other, but people took it other ways.
One person who took the threat seriously was her daughter, Shayna.
Every time they would get mad, she would say she wanted him dead.
According to the prosecution, Shayna was relentless in her pursuit of a hitman, asking anyone and everyone she knew to murder her stepfather, starting with her friends.
I had asked Jason and Jesse, I was like, well, I mean, would you do it?
Prosecutor Stephanie Stephens believes that Shayna was merely a puppet in the deadly scenario, and that Marseille was the one pulling the strings.
There was a life insurance policy on James Kelly for $100,000, and Marseille was the beneficiary, and that was her primary motivation for wanting James dead.
Marseille claims that it was all a mistake, a terrible misunderstanding.
I didn't ask Shayna to go out and find somebody to kill James. She, I guess, thought I was really serious when I wasn't.
The court documents reveal a far more sinister plot. After getting turned down, Shayna propositioned multiple people to assassinate her stepfather, James Kelly.
Joe Rogers, Jason Barber, Jesse Barber. There's a long list here of people that Shayna and Marseille talked to about killing James.
In the fall of 2005, Shayna began dating 23-year-old felon Dallas Christian. She was one step closer to soliciting Kelly's murder.
Dallas had a conviction for having sex with a minor. In Texas, that's sexual assault. Marseille was aware of that and was quite comfortable with Shayna dating Dallas.
I didn't know he was 23. I didn't even try to stop it because I don't believe she would have listened to me.
Dallas was best buddies with Colton Weir, a hot-tempered 15-year-old that some folks thought a bit slow. Authorities believe Shayna had finally found her hitman.
Colton was a little bit more immature and less sophisticated than any of these other people.
If you've ever looked at anybody and there's nothing there, it's just blank, there's no emotion, no soul there, that's him.
On the night of the murder, I was working at Lefkin Memorial Hospital. James was working on his trucks. The last time I talked to James was around 2:30 Sunday morning. He said he was going to shower and go to bed. He wanted me to wake him up at 7.
That same night, Shayna, her boyfriend Dallas, and their friend Colton partied at a local hangout.
That night, we went to Shawnee River Bottom. We stayed there for a few hours.
With two friends in tow, Dallas, Colton, and Shayna headed back to the Kelly house.
Shayna called from payphone and just said that she was going to the house.
But according to the prosecution, Shayna was doing more than just checking in. She was verifying James's whereabouts.
One witness testified that she would call her mom and say, "Where is he? Where is he?"
Coming up, shopping for murder.
$10,000, a pickup truck, and a pair of jet skis.
Colton went in the house and shot James in the face.
And later, a bizarre crime scene points to a deadly love triangle.
They're living together, but Heather still just has this relationship with Joyce. Joyce is like still in Heather's life.
Shayna Sepulveda grew up fast in rural East Texas. By age 14, she was living with an older boyfriend and using drugs. But when her mother, Marseille, married James Kelly, arguments over Shayna's wild behavior reached fever pitch.
I just hated him because I felt like you're not my dad and I would do what I wanted to.
By the fall of 2005, Shayna claims that her mother and stepfather, James Kelly, fought so hard and so often that she believed Marseille wanted him murdered.
It was installed in my mind that this is what my mother wanted because she was so miserable.
According to the prosecution, that's when both mother and daughter went shopping for a hitman. After months of being turned down by various prospects, they found a potential assassin in 15-year-old Colton Weir. Before dawn on October 23rd, 2005, police say 16-year-old Shayna, her boyfriend Dallas, and 15-year-old Colton went cruising for a murder.
We were on the car and we were going to get my stuff.
They parked in this dirt drive a little bit down the road from James's house. Shayna and Colton got out of the car.
As Shayna tells it, that's when Dallas handed her and Colton each a pair of gloves.
They've watched too much TV. They know when you go in and commit a crime like this, you need to wear gloves, so they did.
In my mind, I thought it was just a game. I was thinking that it was gonna scare James. I never would have thought that my friend was gonna kill my stepdad.
When they get to the house, Shayna leads him into the bedroom where James was asleep. And while he's laying there asleep, Colton takes a rifle and shoots him in the head and kills him.
Shayna is adamant that she was already out of the house when Colton pulled the trigger.
I never seen Colton get the gun or nothing. I took off running back towards the car, and out of nowhere, I hear a gunshot.
Whether Shayna was in fact in the room when the shooting occurred, her stepfather James Kelly was dead. Shayna stopped at a payphone and called her mom, still working the hospital night shift, and gave her the news.
She said, "It's over, there's nothing left." I said, "Shayna, I gotta, you know, I'm in a room, I'll call you back." Because I didn't know what she was talking about.
I think Marseille knew what she was talking about.
I told her that James was dead, and she didn't believe me.
Later that night, the group pulled over at a river's edge, 20 miles away from where James Kelly was murdered. Colton tossed the rifle in the water, while Shayna and Dallas burned the gloves and Colton's bloody sweater.
Marseille called James the next morning, supposedly to wake him up. She claimed she called, she got no answer.
So I called his stepdad and I asked if he would go wake James up.
I think it was really important to Marseille that someone else go in and find James rather than her. That way she can prove she was somewhere else.
These aren't the smartest people in the entire world. She thought it through enough to know she needed an alibi, but they didn't think it through any further.
911.
I tried to wake him up. I can't tell if he's been shot in the face or somebody hit him with something in the face, but it's all bloody as hell.
I was told that they thought it was a suicide. I responded and saw that he had a bullet hole in his face. It didn't take me long to figure out it wasn't a suicide.
James Kelly's mother was devastated when she heard her son had been murdered in his sleep.
I felt like my whole world had come apart. Nothing would ever be the same. In any of our lives, his kid's life, his brother's, his sister's.
Investigators interviewed the family, starting with Shayna's mother, Marseille. Almost immediately, she pointed the finger at her own daughter, 16-year-old Shayna.
Well, from what I gathered, all these kids got together and decided to do a murder. Him and my daughter, they've never gotten along.
We began interviewing Shayna and Dallas and Colton. I believe they just made up a general story. Once we began questioning and going outside of the scope of what their story was, the case started coming together.
I didn't know it was going to happen.
You heard them talking about it going to happen.
I didn't know it was going to happen that night.
Colton, I believe you're a smart enough kid to know what you're in here for. So where was James at when you went in the house?
He was under a slip with a TV on.
After you shot, what did you do?
Ran as fast as I could because I was scared.
Where's the gun at now?
We received information from one of the suspects that they come out here to the Goodman Bridge, threw the rifle in the Angelina River, and this area right here is where they burnt their sweater and the pair of gloves. We had the dive team come out, and they found the rifle about 25 feet out in the middle of the river.
Once the murder weapon was recovered, police charged Shayna, Colton, and Dallas with capital murder. Shayna's mother, Marseille, received the same charge for devising the deadly plot. Shayna was eventually transferred to a juvenile facility. John Heath represented her at her trial.
She had no clue that if you're accused of murdering somebody for money, that's a really bad thing.
Marseille's case was the first to go to trial in July of 2006. Against the advice of her attorney, Shayna took the stand in her mother's defense. She claimed she was too high on drugs to remember anything, but she did recall that her mother had nothing to do with the murder.
I made up a whole story because I wanted my mom to walk. I would have done anything to make her happy.
There is no question in my mind as to their guilt.
Shayna's trial began 9 months later. The outlook was bleak.
Shayna had already told her testimony by testifying for her mom, and it didn't line up with anything. It was unsupportable by any fact that I could possibly find.
A long line of witnesses testified that Shayna and her mother Marseille attempted to recruit them to assassinate James Kelly.
There was very little scientific evidence in this particular case, but Shayna and Marseille, they ran their mouths until they convicted themselves.
Shayna Sepulvedo will live out the rest of her life behind rows of razor wire in a Texas maximum security prison.
I feel like I deserve prison time for my part, but I don't feel like I deserve a life sentence. The people here are miserable. It's never a day of peace.
That's cold comfort to James's mother, who has some good days, but mostly bad ones, because she still can't comprehend what caused three young people to kill her boy in such a spiteful manner.
I want to know why they took away a great man. I don't see how anyone could be that cruel.
Coming up, a schoolyard bully.
I had to fight my way through high school.
Grows up to be a killer.
Heather Stone shot her with a shotgun.
The victim was stripped naked underneath the blanket.
Heather was seeing two women. There might have been some jealousy there.
Heather had an infatuation with guns, old guns, new guns.
Heather Stone shot her with a shotgun.
My name is Heather Stone. I've been convicted of second-degree murder in jail for 30 years to life.
It was the kind of sticky summer night that makes everyone restless. That was 6 years before Heather Stone would be the main suspect in the murder of her girlfriend. At 4 a.m. on July 18th, 2006, police responded to a 911 call.
911, what is your emergency?
When detectives arrived at the duplex Heather Stone shared with girlfriend Laura Perkins, Stone was smoking a cigarette, and Perkins was dead on the floor.
She had a gunshot wound to her chest, and there was shockingly little blood.
Heather, a 35-year-old former bus driver, and Laura Perkins, a worker at the Portsmouth Naval Yard, had been drinking and fighting.
Heather indicated that she and her girlfriend had been arguing for days. Her girlfriend had attacked her and struck her several times, and Heather shot her.
In a bizarre twist, Heather's secret lover, 47-year-old Joyce Zelenek, appeared on the scene. She was eager to confirm Heather's story. Joyce claimed that when she called Heather earlier that morning, she could hear the couple arguing.
She wouldn't get away from me. I thought she was gonna kill me.
It didn't take detectives long to poke holes in the story both women had rehearsed, starting with Heather's claim that she shot Laura in self-defense.
She came at me with a knife. I got scared.
She was obviously upset. Very emotional, but a lot of things weren't adding up right from the start.
Raised by their mother, Sheila, in Gloucester, Massachusetts, in the early 1970s, Heather and her younger brother, Jason, were tight.
She was just like having a brother. I would get in fights, Heather would come and bail me out.
their father was an infrequent presence in their lives. But according to Heather and Jason, even his rare visits wreaked havoc within the family.
He was very abusive, not so much to the kids, but towards me, because he drank a lot.
But Heather harbored her own secret, a secret that made her different than other little girls her age.
I had my first girlfriend when I was 13.
When Heather became a teenager, she told her family that she was gay.
It took me a while to come around to that way of thinking that, you know, it's okay, people love. I still love her and everything.
As an outsider, Heather learned early on that to get respect, she had to fight for it.
I had to fight my way through high school. Girls wouldn't let me in the bathroom. I took a barrel and put it over a girl's head and whacked it.
Fending off bullies taught Heather that violence was effective. It would later prove to be her undoing.
Hitting somebody. I started thinking that was the way to go.
Soon, aggression fueled by alcohol dictated Heather's life.
Right from a very early age, she started drinking.
She's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde when she drinks. Totally different person, almost like the devil came into her.
Heather dropped out of school at 16 and was content with working a string of menial jobs. But she longed to be a mom, and at age 23, convinced a male friend to father her child. Daughter Destiny was born in 1994. 7 years later, Heather gave birth to a boy she named Chance. Motherhood calmed her demons, but alcohol ignited her rage. Heather Stone developed a pattern of hurting the ones she loved the most.
She's had extensive number of charges related to domestic violence.
During the time when she was drinking, she had a bad temper.
Heather had one incident where she allegedly attacked an ex-girlfriend with a can of spaghetti. Ultimately, all of those charges were dropped.
When I drink, I would grab my girlfriends, punch them. I felt bad about it after.
I used to tell her all the time, Heather, you shouldn't be doing stuff like that. She would become very, very physical.
Ignoring her mother's advice, Heather began another volatile relationship with Joyce Zelinek.
I hardly ever hit her. I did grab her one night, choked her. She wouldn't stop saying how much of a loser I was.
Despite their battles, the couple thrived on the drama of their explosive courtship. Then, in 2004, in an effort to create some distance, Heather moved from Massachusetts to Dover, New Hampshire.
I wanted a new life.
Within 3 months, Heather was trolling internet dating sites in search of a new girlfriend. She found her in Laura Perkins, a 35-year-old single mother and Navy reservist. The new liaison took off fast. Heather uprooted her kids again to move in with Laura, but Heather couldn't let go of her ex.
So they're living together, but Heather still just has this relationship with Joyce. Joyce is like still in Heather's life.
Coming up, a lover's quarrel.
She was putting me down just like the rest of them did.
And later, a desperate housewife gives her lover a deadly choice.
She says, if you don't kill Randy, I'll just get with somebody who will.
By 2006, 35-year-old Heather Stone was deep in the middle of a toxic love triangle with ex-girlfriend Joyce Zelinek and new flame Laura Perkins. Shortly after meeting Perkins online, they moved in together, but the alcohol and the domestic strife followed.
It appeared as if they were a family. However, there was a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, a lot of tension.
They'd fight about stupid stuff sometimes, and when they'd get drunk, they'd fight about even dumber stuff.
The police department had 3 or 4 separate contacts with the two of them. In all those cases, alcohol was somewhat involved.
With the drinks flowing and Joyce still in the picture, Heather's relationship with Laura was unraveling fast.
I would tell Laura we're just friends. Joyce was my everything.
Joyce really thought Heather's gonna leave Laura and come back to me and we're gonna be happy together.
While Heather was sneaking around with Joyce, Laura was planning her exit strategy.
The day she was murdered, Laura's best friend and her colleagues at the shipyard plan to move Laura out of her house to sort of escape this bad relationship.
She said she had another girlfriend. And she said in the morning she was gonna move her out. We got like a 30 pack of beer.
The neighbors talk about how they hear arguing and arguing for hours.
It wasn't long before the combination of booze, insults, and sexual jealousy triggered Heather's temper.
She was putting me down just like the rest of them did, calling me a loser.
Heather goes to her bedroom, gets the shotgun. The shotgun is loaded.
Heather came back into the living room where Laura was standing.
I was just gonna scare her. I was not gonna shoot her. And she just started yelling at me. She says, "Oh, you're gonna shoot me? Go ahead." And it went off.
Laura is hit in the chest, falls down right away. Laura probably died very quickly.
In a panic over what she had just done, Heather called Joyce. She needed a plan and an alibi.
I said, "I made a mistake. You gotta help me."
Joyce then drove up from Massachusetts. During that time, Heather cleaned up the blood. She also cut off Laura's clothes.
Once Heather and Joyce concocted a self-defense scenario, Heather took the extreme step of stabbing herself in the leg, but not very convincingly. In order to paint Laura as the aggressor, Heather and Joyce then planted a knife between her fingers.
It was almost as if they were children or young teenagers who were trying to make it look like something it wasn't. But it also shows a guilty mind.
Then Joyce pulled out of the driveway as Heather dialed 911.
Laura was found in this room, her feet in this general direction, with her upper torso more in the center of the room, lying on her back, covered with the blanket.
I remember seeing an x-ray. Her heart had been struck. This woman didn't deserve that.
When Joyce returned to the crime scene, she told police that she had been on the phone with Heather when a nasty fight erupted between Heather and Laura. Joyce stood on the porch as her lover was taken away in a squad car. But the evidence gathered that night quickly disputed Heather's story.
You were dealing with experienced investigators who as much follow the evidence as well as their gut, and things weren't adding up. It had been an hour and a half since the shooting before Heather called 911.
When Heather admitted that she lied about shooting Laura in self-defense, she then insisted that the gun had actually fired accidentally.
Go ahead. Shoot me. I didn't do what she told me to. I didn't do that. It just went off.
As Joyce tells it, she came clean only after being informed that Heather blamed her for staging the crime scene.
Did you actually put the knife in Laura's hand? Yep. So did you want to make it look like it was self-defense?
I wanted to make sure she didn't go to jail.
Faced with the possibility of dying in prison, Heather pled guilty to second-degree murder.
If you take a life, you should serve a good chunk of time in jail.
Heather Stone is serving her time in the New Hampshire Prison for Women. She feels lucky to have the support of her family.
I see her every couple of weeks, and we talk, and we're happy.
As for Heather, she has nothing but time to reflect on that hot summer night.
Laura was a good, giving soul. She didn't deserve what happened to her. I pray to God every day, and I ask for his forgiveness. I ask for her forgiveness.
Coming up, a fatal obsession leads to a deadly proposal.
She was on and off with her husband, but she couldn't keep away from Glenn Bethany.
Tammy asked me if I'd kill Randy.
It was absolutely a senseless murder.
At one point, I did say that I'm gonna kill you.
Tammy wanted her husband killed. 2 days later, that man ended up dead.
My name's Tammy Wiggins. I was convicted of capital murder, and they gave me a life sentence for it.
The swamps and pine woods of East Texas look more like the Deep South than oil country. On days when the wind blows, oil reeks rancid from hundreds of strippers. That's what locals call the rusty wells that gush crude. On March 17, 2001, here, among the fire ants and rattlesnakes, an oil man made a gruesome discovery.
There were scuff marks, shoe prints, a ball-peen hammer, a large puddle of blood.
75 miles away, in Frierson, Louisiana, a truck was engulfed in flames.
Fire department was already on scene and had pretty much extinguished the flames. At the time, we had no reason to suspect anything foul.
But 2 days into the investigation, Marion County detectives were called to a third location.
We found a white male located approximately this location. We found a big hole in his head. It appeared that he'd been slashed or his throat cut several times also.
The body was identified as Randy Wiggins. A few hours later, his pregnant wife, 24-year-old Tammy Rose Wiggins, reported him missing. Tammy claimed that she had last seen Randy at a bar 3 days earlier.
He left, and that was the last time I seen my husband.
Police discovered that Randy Wiggins had filed for divorce and that his wife Tammy was having an affair with a 27-year-old car thief named Glenn Bethany. Bethany's friends told authorities that he had bragged about the murder.
Glenn Bethany told me he went over there and hit him with a hammer. As he's laughing, he's saying, the hammer's stuck in his head, and he's kept on coming towards me. So I stabbed him.
I let him believe that I did because I didn't want him telling on Tammy.
According to witnesses, Tammy promised Glenn Bethany a car in exchange for killing her husband.
She says, if you don't kill Randy, I'll just get with somebody who will.
Tammy Wiggins was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. At a young age, she moved in with her grandparents across the state line in Atlanta, Texas.
Atlanta was a small town. You know, everybody knew everybody. If something happened, you always had somebody there.
At 14, Tammy met 19-year-old Randy Wiggins.
When I first met Randy, I thought he was pretty nice. He was outgoing. He just struck me as a good person.
In 1995, Tammy graduated high school and continued to date Randy.
At first, it did seem like a good thing, but it started going downhill quickly.
Tammy, she could be moody. If Tammy would get mad, the little redhead would strike out.
We'd been drinking and was out having a good time, and I guess I just pushed him too far and he punched me in the face. I ended up with a black eye.
I didn't actually see anything, because Randy was never around when I was there, but from what she and her friends told us, it could get pretty bad.
Me and my husband have gone through some real rough times, and it just seemed to get worse and wasn't getting any better.
Tammy's relationship with her husband, Randy, continued to be volatile. The only time the vicious arguments let up was when their son was born.
After we had Josh, Randy was very loving to him, but things just continued to separate for us.
5 years into her marriage to Randy Wiggins, Tammy began an affair with Glenn Bethany, a 27-year-old car thief.
He was loving and showing me the attention that I wasn't getting from my husband anymore.
She was on and off with her husband, and she loved Bethany. She's worried about losing her child, but she couldn't keep away from Glenn Bethany.
And Tammy's new romantic interest had at least one altercation with her husband.
I had made a threat that I'd beat him up if he beat Tammy up, but I never said that I would kill him or shut him up.
I figured he was just being a macho man, so I never thought anything of it.
The person first and foremost on Tammy's mind was her son. So when Randy threatened to take him away, there was a war of words followed by an angry showdown.
I had gone to a funeral for my great-grandmother. When I came back, he refused to give my son back. And I was ranting and raving, and at one point I did say that I'm gonna kill you.
Tammy insists that her threats were empty, made by a mother desperate to keep her son.
I was reacting out of anger. I don't even have a record of violence or anything.
But Glenn Bethany recalls a different story.
Tammy asked me if I'd kill Randy. I look at her, you know, I don't really think she's serious. A few minutes goes by, she's really getting mad about it. She says, if you don't kill Randy, I'll just get with somebody who will.
Coming up, a custody battle becomes a fight to the death.
Bethany was bragging about the manner and means in which he committed the murder.
Told me Tammy wanted her husband killed.
I never even asked him to do anything. He took it upon himself.
He never loved a girl as much as he loves this girl. He'd do anything for her.
By 2001, 24-year-old Tammy Wiggins was juggling relationships with two men, Glenn Bethany and her husband of 5 years, Randy Wiggins. Despite claims that her marriage was volatile, Tammy says that she and Randy were committed, even when she gave him some devastating news.
I told Randy that I was pregnant and that it could be Bethany's, and he told me that he didn't care. He would raise it just like it was his.
On a crisp spring Saturday, at an oil field near the Wiggins home, a maintenance worker stumbled upon a grisly scene.
The oil well site, there were scuff marks, shoe prints, a ball peen hammer, a large puddle of blood.
Without a missing persons report or a body, police were stumped. 75 miles away in Louisiana, Corporal Adam Ewing responded to a call about a burning truck.
We located a gold Ford pickup truck that was sitting here in the middle of the road. Fire department was already on scene and had pretty much extinguished the flames. At the time, we had no reason to suspect anything foul.
Back in Texas, investigators in Marion County were called to a third crime scene, where they began to reconstruct a complicated chain of events.
Upon arriving at the scene, we found a white male located approximately this location, face down, fetal position. His head had made an impact spot where he was dropped from a distance. We found a big hole in his head. It appeared that he'd been slashed or his throat cut several times also.
Detectives believed the victim had been killed in another location. Later that night, Tammy Wiggins reported her husband missing. She provided police with a written statement of the last time she saw her husband.
He left her a note that said that he was going to meet her at the Wooden Indian Club.
All it said was, I'll see you when you get there. It looks like we need to discuss a few things.
But according to Randy's letter, there was more to this meeting.
I met him up there at the Wooden Indian. He was sitting at the table and had already had a few drinks. And then he started talking about wanting to go to the Magnolia Club, a place we hang out often.
Tammy claimed that they pulled over on an isolated road.
They needed to go use the restroom. So we pulled over there, used the restroom, and then we went on straight to the Magnolia.
Just over the Louisiana state line, the Magnolia Club was a popular local hangout.
We went in, he went to the bar and ordered his drink, and because I was pregnant, we got a virgin margarita.
Tammy claimed that just as they were leaving, a car with four unknown men pulled up.
The driver got out and was talking to my husband, and he comes back over and tells me that they want to go down to another bar down the street. He left, and that was the last time I seen my husband.
But Tammy's story did not sit right with one man, Texas Ranger Howard Dunham.
I don't think the four men in the car is the truth. I don't think that happened. It's just a story that Tammy made up.
Ranger Dunham had a theory. He speculates that Tammy and Randy left the Magnolia Club together, and that's when things turned deadly.
Tammy was driving, Randy was in the passenger seat. They left Louisiana and drove probably a mile into Texas. She turned into that tank battery site, and that's where Glenn Bethany was waiting on Tammy to bring Randy to commit the crime. The driver door was very difficult to open from the inside, so we believe that she had Randy get out and come around to the driver's side to open the door, and that's where the assault occurred. Glenn Bethany hit Randy in the head with a hammer. He lost control of the hammer. We believe a screwdriver was used to stab him. After the assault, Tammy went back to the Magnolia Club to establish an alibi. Bethany pulled off into a very remote area, got rid of the body, and then he drove south of Shreveport, Louisiana, and burned the vehicle.
Police got a break in the case when witnesses reported that Glenn Bethany bragged about killing Randy and had coached Tammy on what to say to police.
Glenn ended up telling me what he did. He went over there, hit him with a hammer, only like three times. As he's laughing, he's saying, the hammer's stuck in his head. And he's kept on coming towards me, so I stabbed him. I think, in a way, he wanted to get caught.
A few days later, Tammy was arrested. According to prosecutors, in exchange for Randy's murder, Tammy promised Bethany the title to Randy's Lincoln. When he was arrested, the pink slip was indeed discovered in his wallet. Tammy Wiggins and Glenn Bethany were charged with capital murder. While out on bail, Tammy gave birth to Glenn Bethany's daughter, whom she named Harley. She's being raised by relatives.
I just couldn't believe that it was all happening.
Bethany claimed that he lied to his friend Mark Fish to protect Tammy.
I just let him assume that I did because I didn't want him telling on Tammy. At that time, I just couldn't see her going to prison, especially pregnant with my child.
During his trial, Bethany admitted to burning the truck used to transport Randy's body, but denied killing him.
I knew exactly what happened. I hid it. I helped cover it up. I did all that. I am guilty. Guilty of physically killing Randy? No.
Facing a life sentence, Tammy pled not guilty. Although there was no forensics to link Tammy to the crime, the prosecution used her own words against her.
The parts that hurt her were that she had said that she wanted her husband dead, that he was going to take their child. If Bethany would do that, she would marry him, that she would give Bethany the vehicle.
Bethany never said I was at the oil site. There was no physical evidence against me, only what Bethany supposedly said.
Three witnesses testifying that those statements were made pretty much did it for her.
After a four-day trial, the jury deliberated. 90 minutes later, the verdict was guilty. As for Tammy, she will spend the rest of her life in a maximum security prison. 10 years after Randy's murder, she still maintains the jury got it wrong.
I'm in here and I'm innocent. I spend my time the best I can, a day at a time. I miss my children so much. I didn't even have contact with my children for a long time.
To me, the murder of Randy Wiggins was unnecessary. If Tammy wanted to not be with him and to be with Glenn Bethany, all she had to do was leave.
I pray every day that one day, someday, he's going to be there to help me. And then I'll be home with my kids and my family.